His face and body are whitened with clay, and he is no longer recognizable as the youth who left his village and his tribe 2 months before. The wounds of his ordeal mark him as one who has crossed the boundary of childhood and has put that life behind him. He is absolutely, radically alone. During this time, or time out in his life, he is out of relation with all others in his tribe, armed with only the rituals and chants taught to him by an initiation master. He wanders free and unattached. Each night, he goes to sleep, praying that this will be the night of the great vision. It will then, and thus, he discovers his spirit guide, or his guardian elder. That voice will lead him to his true vocation and his real name. When this has happened, he will know the time has come to return to the village and take up the rights and responsibilities of his new status and his new identity. Marked by his scars and empowered by his knowledge, he will rejoin the social order on his own basis. He will be, in a profound sense, a new person. The person he used to be is dead. It died in the ordeal and the ritual with which this rite of passage began. His parents signify his death by burning the sleeping mat he had used throughout his childhood. In the first week of his new life back in the village, he will not remember his old name. He has been reborn, and for a time his behavior will recall that of a very small child. He will be unable to remember the old terms for familiar objects. The youth has been renewed and enlightened by his ritual transition. The time out he has spent has provided a gateway to the original chaos from which the gods fashioned the world in the beginning. All new form, his people believe, must begin in that chaos, and any gap in time may provide access to it. They believe such gaps occur at the end of any cycle, at the end of a year or a season, at the end of the reign of a chief, at the end of a phase of an individual's own life, nature, or the community, or the person enters the gap and dies. Then, after a time out, each is reborn. And that is the way in which life renews and sustains itself. It is the way of withdrawal and return. It is the way of forgetting and of rediscovery. It is the way of ending and beginning. In following this process, the person crosses over from an old way of being to a new way of being and is renewed. So wrote William Bridges. A few years ago, back in New Jersey, I attended the Religious Educators Cluster meeting, as was my practice each month. Our UUA staff people, as usual, brought a rich treasure trove of resources. I decided to buy a book. It was called Transitions, Making Sense of Life's Changes, written by William Bridges. I had never heard of him. I had no idea what use this book might have for me in either my congregation or my personal life. My husband Rob saw the book that day when I got home. Something made me suggest that he take a look at it. He doesn't always follow my suggestions. But in this case, he began to read it immediately. Soon he was tearing through it at a remarkable pace, making exclamations and giving me reports on a regular basis. "This is amazing," he said. "This is great stuff." And within a couple of days, he had finished the book. Lo and behold, 2.5 weeks later, Rob was laid off from his job at a big pharmaceutical advertising company. Why had he begun to read the book so avidly? It seems that he already had a feeling that a major transition was happening in his life. In recent months, Rob had decided that he wasn't really interested in striving to reach the next rung on the corporate ladder. He had begun to believe that all was past for him, and he was okay with just taking it one day at a time until retirement. Rob expected that this decision would reduce his stress at work, to bring him a sense of inner peace, but it hadn't worked out that way. In fact, he was very antsy and much more uncomfortable than before. On some level, he knew that something was up. It was almost as if his body was getting him ready for something that his brain hadn't yet been able to accept. And so, when his boss called him into the office to deliver the news, Rob had a remarkable experience. He had a sense of letting go. He found himself smiling. He felt an extraordinary sense of relief. In the next couple of weeks, as he finished his time at the ad agency, people were telling him that they had never seen him so relaxed. Why? Rob had begun to hatch an idea for something he thought he would never have the chance to do again before he retired. He had begun to lay the groundwork for a new business venture. Rob says that reading the book Transitions really made all of that possible for him. He was well aware that being laid off at his age in 2009, in the middle of the worst economy in decades, that he should have been terrified. He knew that he should have run back out into the job market and taken the first thing that he could find. But this book, as a period of preparation, he didn't panic. He understood that he could look at the situation as a process. He recognized that life was offering him a chance to make a major transition, to do something that he really deeply wanted to do. And once he'd accepted that, he was able to give it the time and the energy that it deserved. Because the book helped him so much, I thought, at this time, with you going through so many changes and transitions, that the concepts might be useful for you as well. We all go through changes in our lives, whether it's a move, a marriage, children, careers, divorce, illness, loss, death of a loved one. Some of these changes are built into our life cycle. You may know the ancient riddle of the Sphinx. In the story, the Sphinx asks Oedipus, "What walks on 4 legs at dawn, 2 legs at noon, and 3 at sunset?" The answer, of course, is a human being. A child crawls on all 4s at the beginning of life, on 2 as an adult, and on 3 with the help of a cane in our golden years. Women have the biological transitions of maiden, mother, and crone, which symbolize our childhood, our childbearing years, whether we have children or not, and the time following menopause. These changes can just be changes and things that we adjust to, or they may trigger or coincide with larger internal shifts that are going on within us. William Bridges makes a distinction between a change and a transition by defining a transition as a major internal shift. We are going along being who we are, and then, whether suddenly or gradually of our own accord, with no prior planning on our part, the world turns, and we find ourselves at the end of a chapter of our lives. Bridges says that one of the most important differences between change and a transition is that a transition starts with letting go of what no longer fits or is adequate to this stage of life. There is an inner ending, and that is what initiates the transition. Our culture thrives on change. We are a nation of immigrants, and we keep on moving. About 1 in 6 Americans move each year. On the average, an American moves about every 7 years over the course of their lifespan. Change is constant. Our work is always changing through mergers and acquisitions, outsourcing, the expansion or contraction of our economy. And yet, many of us resist change, and we don't do it very well. We dig in our heels. We say, oh, I've already tried that, or we've always done it this way. There is a definite fear factor in change, a fear of loss, a fear of being perceived as incompetent or obsolete, the fear and discomfort of seeming weakness, of having to grieve. Yet letting go is the first step in the transition process. Bridges asks the question, and I pose it to you, what is it time to let go of in my life right now? An attitude, a belief, a style of responding, a dream? If we do not let go of what we have outgrown, let go of that which no longer serves us, we will carry that old habit and expectation or attitude into the new. So we have to let it go. We have to accept that something has ended and that something new is going to begin. It's not easy, but it is essential. And there's another reason that it's not easy. That's because there is a crucial second step. As with the youth in the tribal ritual, when the old is ending and before the new can truly begin, a time out is needed. You might call this a time of confusion, of wandering in the wilderness. In the Exodus story, Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt, but he knew they were not yet ready for the promised land. He knew that they would have carried their slave mentality with them. So Moses knew that they had to form a new identity as a people before they were ready to form a nation. As you will recall from the Hebrew scriptures, that this was not an easy time. Even though their basic needs were being met, they were dissatisfied and disgruntled in their position. They wanted to get on with things, get started in their new home. But they had to wait. They had to wander. Confusion and discomfort are the markings of this interim time. We may even feel angry or terrified. We may need to try to really understand, therefore, what we are going through to get in touch with the process. We need to talk with people who will listen and help us think through real concerns at this vulnerable time. And then maybe we can trust the interim time, that this transition will have something to teach us. Maybe with time, we may even recognize that there is a gift emerging from the pain. So it's important that we don't hurry through it. It's important to have a spiritual calm that will allow us to wander until the new identity is formed and the new path, or at least the next step in the process, is revealed or discerned. After Rob left the ad agency with the book Transitions firmly in his mind, he took a month to reflect, to talk with many people, and create a plan before launching his new business. For the Israelites, the transition took 40 years. There is a story that my spiritual teacher and dream worker, Reverend Jeremy Taylor, tells about the process of reincarnation in the Hindu tradition. The story says that when we die, we are confronted with our worst fears. We desperately want to get away from these terrible, horrible images. So if we do not achieve spiritual discipline when we are alive, our soul will be reborn so urgently that it will haphazardly dive between any two coupling animals that it finds. In that situation, it is likely to make a poor choice about its next life. On the other hand, if we have practiced our spiritual discipline, we will have the calm center to withstand these intense fears. We will be able to take our time in selecting our new life. Just so. Rather than panicking and rushing headlong into the next job, relationship, settled minister, you name it, we need to maintain our serenity. Some may even find a sense of adventure while going through the unsettling interim time. This is the time for us to ask new questions. What is standing backstage in the wings of my life, waiting to make its entrance? An idea, a fantasy, a note from an old friend on Facebook. It can be as if there is a message from the universe that is waiting for us to pay attention to and invite in. Because Eureka, there will come a time that if when we have been paying attention to the clues, hints, maybe even revelations that come our way, we will be ready, as Mary Oliver says, to come back from wandering in the wilderness, to feel and recognize the grace to save the only life we can, our own. What do I mean by saving our lives? Thomas Holmes and Richard Ray conducted a study about 40 years ago that correlated stress levels with the likelihood of illness. The average American has a stress level of 150 that carries a relatively low likelihood of illness. But Holmes and Ray found that with a level of 300, a person would have a 90% chance of being hospitalized in the coming year. 90%. You can find this test online and take it yourself. Just Google Holmes-Ray stress scale and find out if things are building to the breaking point in your own life? For me, the year was 1994. It was quite a year. I graduated from college right up the street with my BA, separated from my former husband, leading to a divorce, moved, changed some aspects of my work, and applied for seminary. That transition score gave me a stress score of 287. You won't be surprised to learn that I spent the first week of seminary in my dorm room, sick as a dog. Fortunately, I was not hospitalized. We have to take good care when these changes confront us. It's important to honor the natural course and cycle of things. We can't really fight or ignore or resist Mother Nature. She is a powerful force and has her own ways of getting our attention. We need to take time. For Moses, it took 40 years. For Jesus, it took 40 days before beginning his ministry. But are we as individuals willing to take 40 minutes to spend some time at the beach, to take a little time to watch the clouds, or to write down an important dream that could hold a symbolic message for us in our waking life? So I was so pleased to see that your interim time with Reverend Rick Hoyt McDaniels will last not 40 years nor 40 days, but somewhere around 30 months. This will give you ample time to heal from Reverend Mitra's leaving, time to assess where your congregation is and develop a vision of who you want to be, what you'd like this congregation to become. Because if you take this time and use it well, if you take a deep breath and reflect and talk among yourselves and with others, if you develop a vision and create a plan, your chances for success, both short and long term, will be so very much greater. If you take this time that's been given to you and use it to shape a strong and effective transition, you will bear remarkable fruit from that process. You will then be open to calling the settled minister who will be able to truly lead you into becoming the church you aspire to be. As individuals and as a congregation, consider the words of Reverend Howard Thurman, who said, "Don't ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive." Endings, transitions or interims, beginnings. Take a deep breath. Honor your calling as an individual and as a church. Enjoy and value this time. You are involved in a process that will help you come alive.